is your program Historias, a podcast dedicated to the analysis of Latin American studies. We discuss books about Latin America published in English and Spanish. Today, we have the great pleasure of having Paulina Alberto in the program. She is a historian of Afro-Latin American lives, thought, and politics as they unfolded in the aftermath of slavery, particularly in Brazil and Argentina. Her work explores the intersections of ideas of race and nation in Latin America, with a focus on how Afro-Latin Americans have shaped and contested the region's ideologies of racial assimilation and inclusion in their ongoing struggles for recognition and equality. We invited historian Paulina Alberto to this program to talk about her most recent work, Black Legend, The Many Lives of Raul Grijera and the Power of Racial Storytelling in Argentina. It was a book published by Cambridge University Press in 2022. Paulina, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carmen. It's so great to be here.
So let me start asking you about the project. How did you come to the project? And probably you can talk about the project in itself in concrete terms, but also you can talk a little bit about your academic trajectory.
Yeah, well, my first book, which was based on my dissertation, had been about Brazil. It had been about Black intellectuals in 20th century Brazil. And I used primarily the Black press of Brazil, which is very robust for the 20th century, to think about the ways that Black thinkers had not just contested ideologies of racial democracy, which is kind of the story that most people know for the second half of the 20th century, especially, but also how in the first half of the 20th century, they had been instrumental in shaping these ideas about racial inclusion as an alternative to much more exclusionary ideas of scientific racism. And so this sort of guiding myth of Brazilian identity, which is, you know, democracia racial, right, or racial democracy, was something that is usually attributed to white thinkers like Gilberto Freire. And I found in the press, this is not what I set out to look for, but I found that it was a much more contested and a much more contestatory kind of idea, complex idea from below that had been shaped really in many ways first by Black thinkers as an anti-racist strategy. And then it sort of fell out of their hands because of the ways that it was used by Brazilian elites and the state. So that was my first project. And I was really interested in intellectual history of Afro-Latin America, the role of intellectuals who defined themselves as Black or as people of African descent. And I was really interested in the 20th century as a time when many Latin American countries developed, you know, Black movements, Black consciousness, sort of a kind of tradition of racially defined activism. But I kind of looked over my shoulder to Argentina, which is where I'm from. And I realized, you know, when I was starting my dissertation, I had been very interested in working on sort of thinking about Argentina as part of the African diaspora. But it seemed like it was not a very productive area of inquiry. You know, we had George Reed Andrews' wonderful book, The Afro-Argentines of Buenos Aires. But when I talked to, you know, advisors and potential, you know, mentors about this idea, they said, you know, there's kind of not much more to say about the topic. And so that's when I decided to focus on Brazil, which had been an early interest of mine. But as I was finishing the Brazil book, I noticed that things were changing in Argentina, especially around the time of the bicentennial of independence. So between 2010 and 2016, I started to notice almost casually this happened with just me going to Buenos Aires and visiting my family and browsing bookstores. I started to find novels, especially historical novels, that were suddenly rethinking the Argentine past in a kind of racial key. So there was a blockbuster series of novels by a very kind of popular romance novelist known as Florencia Bonelli, who had written a series of books about, it's called Indias Blancas, which is about the tradition of cautivas, of white women who had been captured by an indigenous leader and then ended up falling in love. And so these interracial romances Then I found a couple of those that had to do with Afro descendants. I thought, what is happening here? You know, like white Argentina is suddenly adopting these tropes that are much more identified with these kind of early to mid 20th century literary trends elsewhere in Latin America, or even late 19th century, the kinds of foundational fictions that Doris Summer has written about, you know, these cross racial romances that help found nations that will be, you know, multiracial in some way. Why is this happening in Argentina at this time? So I first became interested in that shift, and that shift forced me to think about, I was trying to think about racial ideologies in a way that would be easier to communicate in the classroom. I was teaching courses on racial fictions and racial ideologies in Brazil and Argentina. And I realized at that point, when I was trying to explain to students the shift from, you know, Argentine narratives of whiteness to these new narratives that embraced kind of mixture or hybridity in the classroom, I was trying to figure out how to kind of label that for students and have it be an accessible concept. And I started thinking about racial narratives, racial storytelling, because I was working with fiction. And so, you know, I would ask the students, let's think together about what is the story of race and nation in Argentina that this novel is telling, right? So some novels were telling a kind of story that was what I ended up calling sort of the rosy legend or the white legend of Argentina, which is the, you know, celebration of European conquest and this kind of civilizing narrative that we had almost no indigenous people. And then, you know, Argentina conquered these vast lands and settled them with European immigrants. And isn't it wonderful that Argentina is a kind of European nation, which is essentially the dominant narrative that Argentina has had for most of the 20th and, you know, even till today, arguably. So that was a kind of white legend. Then there was something that I started to identify as the Black legend of Argentine history, which was actually very similar in its outcome to this white legend or rosy legend, but it was told in the key of denunciation, right? And so that there had been a genocide of indigenous people, that Afro-Argentines had also been disappeared actively or passively. And while it condemned this outcome, right, of sort of state policies of homogenization, forced assimilation, or even genocide, it still landed on the notion that Argentina was a white nation. And then there was this new set of novels that were proposing something like a brown legend for Argentina, like a mestizaje story that had never been very prominent in Argentina. And so with those ideas in mind, I had already started working on, you know, these new historical narratives that were coming out through historical fiction. And I became interested in which stories got picked up in those novels. And one of the stories that I found, which was interesting, was not actually a textual story. It was an image on the cover of one of the novels about Afro descendants, a novel called Fiebre Negra. It had the image of a man, a photograph of a man, who was being sort of, I suppose, used on the cover as if it were a representation of one of the main characters. But of course, the main characters from this novel were from the 19th century. And this man had been photographed clearly in the 20th, because, you know, that's when it was, you know, photography was being used primarily. And I thought, who is this man? And at the same time, I had started thinking about doing a research project on Afro-Argentines in Argentina, wondering about whether it was possible in this new moment of interest in race. There had been a kind of a resurgence of work on Afro-Argentine history done by Argentine colleagues, the Grupo de Estudios Afro-Latinoamericanos, which, you know, was incredible how it sort of re-energized this field. And I thought it would be wonderful to now go back and try to write a similar book about Argentina in the 20th century, which is seen as a time when Afro-Argentines had definitively disappeared, right? They had been present in the colonial period. Over the course of the 19th century, their presence had dwindled. And by the 20th century is when you get these narratives of white Argentina. And I thought, well, surely there were still Afro-descendants, right? Because there are now in the present. So those people must have, you know, those families must have persisted through the 20th. So I had gone to the photography section of the National Archive, which is the only part of the archive where 20th century documents are preserved, in this photography section. And I had found photographs of a man whose name I found out was Raul Grijera. And it turned out that that man, one of those photographs was the one was the photograph on the cover of this 19th century, of this novel set in the 19th century that I had already been interested in. So I thought there's some kind of synergy here between the kind of rediscovery of a Black past in the popular imagination around, you know, fiction and historical fiction, and this sort of history that has remained latent in these photographic archives, but which seems to be, you know, maybe ready to be told in a different way. So then that's when I switched gears from thinking about historical fiction to thinking about writing an actual historical book that might tell me more about this man, Raul Grijera, who was clearly an Afro-descendant, who had clearly lived in the 20th century. In fact, I figured out from looking at one of the recortes or clippings on the back of one of the photographs that he was alive in the 1950s. I later found out that he died in 1955. So this was a man whose life had spanned a good part of the 20th century. And that's when I became extremely interested in thinking about, well, would it be possible to tell kind of a more continuous history of Afro-Argentina that sutures this gap between the 19th century and the 20th century when Afro-Argentines supposedly disappeared. So that's how I got started. It kind of came together from various perspectives, my ongoing interest in racial ideologies and Black thinkers, and my interest in how Argentina fit into broader discussions about race in Latin America, and then this interest in thinking about the relationship between racial ideologies and narrativity, storytelling. And then my interest in Black intellectual history was piqued by this man who did not leave a lot of writing himself behind, but about whom so much was written. And so I was trying to see if it was possible to, through alternate means, particularly through visual sources, to try to reconstruct how he might have experienced these processes of racialization. So that's where it all sort of fit together.
So interesting to hear how you came about to the project. Now, let me ask you, how does telling and writing the history of a single individual illuminate broader social and cultural history of Afro-Argentines and Blackness in Argentina and in the Southern Cone?
Yeah, no, it's a great question because, you know, in the end, this is just one man. He was in many ways exceptional. So the way that he ended up getting photographed is because he had been a famous person. It was clear that he had been famous. I wasn't sure for what when I first began. It took me a while to figure out. And so I should probably back up a little bit and just tell you a little bit about Raul Grijera. He was a man who had been famous in his youth. So when he was in his 20s, and this was around 1910, he was born in 1886. He became famous around 1910 as a kind of icon or fixture of the bohemian nightlife of Buenos Aires and of the nascent tango. So he was really kind of an appealing and charming sort of character of the nightlife. And he even styled himself as El Murciélago, you know, a person who never slept, who was out all night, who was, you know, going to all the bars and dances and cafes. And he was written about at the time with a certain degree of reverence and sort of curiosity surrounding him and mystery surrounding him, and clearly had made an impact on the world of the tango. I later discovered, in part because he himself was probably bringing traditions from, you know, dance and musical traditions from his own community to these tango dances that were taking place in downtown Buenos Aires, you know, on Calle Corrientes. So there was this story of having been a famous person that actually took a lot of excavating to find. But the dominant stories that were much easier to find, and which were the very first ones I were presented with, were sort of an avalanche of derogatory stories about this man, that he had been briefly famous in the 1910s and 20s, but that his fame was actually secondary or spurious or fabricated because his only claim to fame was that he was the buffon of the niños bien, the sort of elite boys, elite young men of the city who were sort of playboys and raucous and went around, you know, wreaking havoc in the city and getting drunk, and who used Raúl as kind of their personal their personal clown, their personal entertainer, somebody they actually played very harsh pranks on. And so it was this very demeaning story about this man. And then the rest of the story was that he eventually was abandoned by these young men, that he fell into homelessness and poverty, and eventually ended his days in a mental institution and forgotten. And parts of the stories are true, but they're not exactly as they are told. So I set out to try to understand, on the one hand, these sorts of racial stories that's how I sort of thought about the corpus of stories that were repeated about him over time and that were actually quite similar to each other. It was clear that the stories repeated themselves rather than trying to touch base with some kind of historical person who had actually existed. They were stories that were almost self-reproducing and that started to be told really after his decline in the 1930s. I tried to contrast that with other kinds of information about him that I found in stories that were contemporaneous to his rise to fame. So the press of the period, you know, sheet music, covers, other kinds of sources that told this counter story about him actually having been a celebrity in his own right. So once I figured out that the goal of my book was in some ways to read the racial stories, these fictions about his life, against the grain and in sort of conversation with archival and other kinds of sources that could help me construct a counter narrative, I realized that the best way to do that was to, you know, write a micro history of this man's life, which immediately took me back into the archives, into the 19th century archives, which is the period of Raúl's life for which Argentina's national archives really do shine. And going back into the 19th century meant that, you know, it was harder to find him, but it was easier to find his parents, his grandparents. And once I was able to reconstruct, for example, his grandparents' probate records, you know, the property they owned, who they left it to, struggles over that same house that Raúl was born in, but that had been in his family for several generations. In his parents' generation, there were struggles over that house. So there was a lot of documentation produced about that house using censuses, using, you know, municipal water records, all kinds of records, anywhere I could find Raúl's father or mother, you know, using the black press where Raúl's father and mother appeared, especially his father with some frequency, it became possible to reconstruct a whole community around Raúl, both for his youth and then moving forward a little bit into his young adulthood. And what I found was that once you identified a person of African descent in the public record, in the archives, in the press, if you follow them around the sources and look closely, you will soon see that there are many other people of African descent in Buenos Aires who are, you know, living their lives in some ways as unmarked Argentines and sometimes as visibly, you know, marked Afro descendants. So telling the story of one man actually allowed me as a social historian to constantly be crossing paths, you know. So for instance, when Raúl was sent to a reformatory in his youth, and there I found that there were many other young men marked as pardo or trigueños, which was a category that could include Afro descendants. And so it's in short, everywhere I looked, Raúl was surrounded by other people from the Afro-Argentine community, as well as by people who were not Afro-Argentine. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is that by identifying the racial stories or racial fictions that were told about Afro-descendants, both particular Afro-descendants like Raúl, who had stories told about him with his own name and last name, but also the broader racial narratives that were told in Argentina about the fate of Afro-Argentines in general, such as that they had disappeared or that they were unfit for citizenship, and so forth, thinking about those stories as something that shaped the lives of many Afro-descendants in the moment allowed me to think about the kind of lived experience of racialization that other Afro-Argentines beyond Raúl might have experienced. In other words, seeing Raúl struggle with the way that stories were shaping his life as he lived it by funneling him towards certain outcomes or by opening or foreclosing certain possibilities based on his race, based on who people thought he was, made me think in different ways about how ideologies of race kind of filtered down into society in ways that had similar effects for people who might be less famous than Raul, but who we can also see in the historical records. So that's kind of how I tried to think about it. I tried to get away from the question of, is he representative or not? But rather to think about connectivity, you know, how does his experience intersect? And how is he enmeshed in stories in a way that can give us insight? Because he's famous, we get insight about what's happening with him that may actually not be that different from the ways that everyday Afro-descendants experienced stories about, quote, you know, Black people and what they were like.
It is a very ambitious story. It's a book that starts in mid-19th century and ends in the present. So it's a long arc that you build by looking at the records of the ancestors and his own life. It sounds much more narrow when you say it's the history of one life, but actually it's 150 years of history.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to use his biological life, right, from 1886 to 1955. It's the fulcrum of the book, but then the book expands backwards into the lives of his ancestors, which was really important for me. I reach all the way back to his great grandfather, who I believe was taken captive in Africa from the Mina Coast and brought to Buenos Aires through Brazil, and who was the founder of a candombe, a historic candombe, or an Afro-Argentine, you know, ethnic association. And so I really wanted to ground Raul in the depth of the many generations of family that he had on Argentine soil, because one of the hallmarks of the stories that were told about him, these racial stories, is that he came out of nowhere, that it was impossible to know where he came from, because, you know, the subtext is that Argentina didn't really have any slave past, or if it did, it was deep in the past, so it was inexplicable how a man of such visible African descent could still be alive in the mid-20th century. And I wanted to demonstrate exactly where he came from, that it was possible to know it, and that he was not a rarity, right? So it was that part of the book for me was really important to truly ground Raul in a deep, deep history of Black presence on what became Argentine soil. Deep and thick, hopefully wide. And then the second kind of expansion takes place after his death, and that gets us to the present, so between the 20th century and the present. And I do that through what I call his afterlives, which are these racial stories that were told basically once he was considered to be gone from the public eye or even dead. He was declared dead many times before his actual death, which is another repeating trope in the stories of Black disappearance, which is that they assert the vanishing of Black populations when they're actually very much alive. So we see that in Raul's own biography. And he and I use the kind of repeating tropes of those stories about his life and death as a way of thinking about how the history of Afro-Argentines has been told in Argentina in this key of either the white legend, the Black legend, or the brown legend, which I argue actually reproduces some of these same ideas of Black disappearance.
You have a fabulous archival work. And as I was reading the book, one of the things that caught my attention was the reluctance of the church to reveal some of those papers, because they may be afraid that you may discover people's Black ancestors. And I thought that story in itself was fascinating. So I wonder if you can talk about the almost detective work that you had to do in the archives.
Yeah, no, I was not prepared for parish records, sacramental records, to be difficult to access. I thought I was definitely prepared to have it be very difficult to get access to the reformatory that I knew Raul had been in, because it's still a functioning reformatory. And, you know, I heard that there were no records that could be accessed anymore, but I ended up getting really lucky and getting in there. I knew it would be difficult to get into the mental institution where he died and to get those records, because again, it's still a functioning institution. I wasn't sure what the rules around attaining, you know, someone's medical file would be, because they're not in an archive. They're not in a public archive. They're held still as part of the repository of this institution. But I did not think that ecclesiastical records from the 19th century were going to be at all controversial. I thought, you know, this is the kind of thing that you call the parish and you make an appointment and you go in. And, you know, George Read Andrews's book on Afro-Argentines cited all of these parish books directly, and he was working on race. So I was definitely not prepared when I called. I think it was, I called various of the parishes, but I had a very interesting interaction with, I think it was the priest who picked up the phone for San Telmo. And I said, you know, I'm interested in looking at your books. And I said, I'm a historian. I'm working on a family in the 19th century. I hadn't even told him the topic of my book yet. And he said, no, I can't let you look at those records, you know, because this is a parish in which there were a lot of Afro descendants, and you might find that some of the people, like, do you have, he asked me if I had permission from the family. And I said, no, I don't. I'm a historian. I had not identified any of their descendants. He said, no, because you might discover that some of these families have African descent and people don't want that. And I was shocked. And I said, you know, actually, I happen to be writing a book about a man who was known to be of African descent. He was known in public life as El Negro Raúl. There's no doubt that his ancestors were Afro-descendant, and this did not help my case at all. And I was told that I could not access those records. And I don't know if other people have had, I don't know when this happened, when they became so closed off. Fortunately, as you probably know, as many historians of the 19th century or in the early 20th century and back know, Family Search, right? The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, have scanned almost all of these records, or many of these records in Latin America, certainly in Argentina. Most of the parishes, all of the parishes for Buenos Aires have scanned books. And so I was able to access them that way.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was a remarkable experience. And I think that was my first experience when I realized I need to keep a record of things that happened to me as a researcher that are just as revealing about race in my own time as the, you know, the events that I'm trying to research in the past. So I started keeping a notebook of conversations I had with people that kind of displayed people's own assumptions about race in Argentina, precisely the kinds of assumptions that I'm trying to work against in the book. And I ended up working them into the book. So I myself am a little bit of a, hopefully not too present character, but I do try to reveal, I do try to lay bare my own process of research. And when I encountered something that was relevant to the research process, or that I thought was very telling or revealing, I wrote it into the book. But yes, I had to do a lot of detective work. And, you know, there were a lot of data points that I was able to find about Raul and documents about his life. But I always thought, oh, if I could just find one more, you know, this one record or this one case file or this one probate, you know, trial, it always raised more questions than it answered. That was my experience.
And I think that story in itself, of that, like that line of that priest, kind of connects to your bigger argument, which is it's not a history of Afro-Argentines in Argentina. It's a history of Argentina as a whole.
Absolutely. That was something that I really wanted to, argue or demonstrate simply in the doing, especially for my Argentine colleagues. I think in the United States, because there's a long tradition of doing, you know, both for African-American history, I mean, African-American history is clearly U.S. history. And especially with the kind of thinking about how race is not something that only applies, racialization is not something that only applies to people of African descent or Native American people or Asian people. It's racialization is something that applies to white people as well, right? It's one of the keys in which citizenship or not is experienced for all people in a country. I think here that is less of an argument that perhaps still needs to be made. And I think that for Latin Americanists working in the United States, there might be more of a tradition of a focus on Blackness, for example, in different national cases as part of a history of race and nation and citizenship. But in Argentina in particular, the question of race has not been a salient question in social history, especially for the 20th century. There's some recognition that racial categories, caste categories, were, of course, important in the colonial period and in the 19th century. But by and large, for the 20th century, the big questions, the largest question perhaps, is about class, right? And the politics that emerge around issues of class. And so even as the historical field in Argentina has grown around issues of gender and sexuality and, you know, class and new perspectives on cultural history, or it has not really taken up the question of race. That has been seen as something that is not relevant to Argentine society, perhaps a foreign category, a category that comes with a North American vision of racial definition that is sort of inherently outside of Argentine realities. So I really wanted to show that the story of Raúl was not sort of the niche story of one man and one family that would only be of interest to specialists who think about, you know, Afro-Argentina or, you know, or race in Argentina. I thought that this was a wonderful opportunity to show how race, racialization, processes of race making, even the processes of making the whiteness that so many Argentines take for granted as being kind of a transparent attribute of Argentineness in the 20th century, was deeply entwined with the kinds of processes that shaped Raúl's life as a visibly Black man. And it was helpful to me that Raúl's life and that of his ancestors cut across so many other aspects of Argentine history that the historiography has been extremely well developed for. So, for example, his life brings us to the world of the tango and the nightlife, which is a booming area of Argentine historiography. It brings us through the historiography on the police, right? Police, policing, the repression, the sort of the cuestión social in the early 20th century. It brings us through questions of politics, the rise of mass politics, questions of gender and sexuality, questions of the shaping of repressive institutions, and even questions that have to do with the rise of Peronism and anti-Peronism. So showing that Raúl's life intersected with all of these processes, and that his Blackness was in many ways a key component of, or that the discrimination that he faced as a Black man was part of the broader ways in which discrimination worked in Argentine society along these other lines of class or region or sexuality or gender, was a really important argument for me. That a lot of these forms of creating difference that we think about in the 20th century that are seemingly unrelated to race actually had partial roots in thinking around racial exclusions. So that's important to me. And it's important to me also to show that, again, that whiteness itself is a racial story and a racial narrative that was built sort of in contrast to or on the backs of people like Raúl Grijera, right? So I was thrilled and honored when my book was translated and published in Argentina with Prometeo, which is a leading academic press, but in the series Historia Argentina, because it made me very happy to think of this as Argentine history. It's an important part of Argentine history.
That's a wonderful conquest. I love it. So what are your hopes for Raúl's story going forward? And what do you hope readers will take away from this book?
Well, I hope they can take away the idea that we should question the received stories, the stories that get told over and over and over again. You know, teaching maybe even younger readers to look at these things with skepticism when you see something repeated, taken for granted, maybe to ask yourself, is there a different story behind this? Thinking about how narrative and the power of narrative and of telling stories can be extremely damaging, depending whose hands that power is in, but that it can also be extremely liberating if we start to tell new stories that are grounded not in wishful thinking, but in a truthful reaccounting of the past that is perhaps grounded in present day concerns for social justice and racial justice. And the other thing that I hope is that, you know, I tried to put forth a plausible life story for Raul Grijera based on what I was able to find. I would hope and I expect that new information about him will continue to come to light, because I can't imagine that I found every last source about him, positive that I didn't. And so I hope that people will continue to add new voices and new facets to his story. And above all, I hope that in the hands of a new generation of historians and also of Afro-Argentine activists and youth and creative types, maybe we could get new kinds of stories about him, right? Because Raúl, for example, was, as I mentioned, he was featured in tangos, in candombes. He was featured in the first Argentine comic strip, which was actually foundational in cementing his fame, but it did it in a way that was increasingly damaging to his reputation. So I could imagine someone wanting to write, you know, a graphic novel or a new comic strip about Raul that made him into a much more complex, a character perhaps closer to the one that I tried to imagine, or that somebody else could try to imagine based on the available sources. So I just think, you know, he posed for photography in really beautiful ways. I could imagine somebody taking him up in visual art. So I think I would hope that new stories could be told about him that would help to counteract some of the extremely damaging ones that were told for the better part of a century.
I want to finish this interview asking you about your future project. Where are you going with your next research?
Well, thank you for that question. It is at an early stage, but it's exciting for me and for my co-author. This is a project that I'm going to co-write with my friend and colleague, the Argentine historian and anthropologist Lea Heller, who's at CONICET in Buenos Aires and is part of the Grupo de Estudios Afro-Latinoamericanos. And we're working on sort of the life and representations of and actions of an Afro-Argentine woman who became extremely famous in the late 19th and early 20th centuries as a self-trained procuradora, someone who, you know, sort of like a lawyer without a formal title, because she was extremely litigious. She brought dozens, possibly hundreds of cases to various courts. She herself was sued in criminal and civil courts at different times and became famous. And by the time of her death in 1911, it had been said that she was the most famous woman in Buenos Aires. And surely the most litigious. This was Caras y Caretas, which is, you know, Buenos Aires is Argentina's one of its most wide circulation magazines at the time. And so in some ways grows out of the kind of work I did in the book on Raul, which is to understand a famous figure that has been refracted through various often hostile representations. But her name is, I don't know if I said her name yet. Her name is Florentina Diaz, but she went by various names over the course of her life. Perhaps one of the most famous was Florentina Ferrari Diaz de Cruella, which is using one of her paternal surnames and her married name. But she became famous precisely for getting herself into trouble for claiming to be the natural daughter of two different men in order to inherit from both of them. And so we're trying to understand, she's this kind of, you know, trickster figure. You know, is she doing this on purpose? Is she, you know, is she kind of like a a scam artist who's trying to get away with breaking the law? Is she somehow genuine in trying to claim descent from two different fathers because there are all kinds of problems around documentation that make it unclear who her father is? So we're trying to explore her legal strategies. We're trying to understand how she learned the law. And we're trying to think more broadly about the relationship between law, identity, and property, and gender in the Afro-Argentine community in the late 19th century. But again, it's sort of a follow-up question for me from Black Legend was I only able to write this book about this man finding such robust sources because he was a man? And I think this next project shows that, you know, Afro-Argentine women occasionally were able to leave these very strong traces in the archive as well. So we're very excited to learn more about her life.
I want to thank you, Paulina, once again for coming to the program. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. It was wonderful talking to you too. Thanks for inviting me.